Hey, you're listening to Naptown Investigations, a true crime podcast. What we're about to discuss is likely disturbing and contains mature content with the use of adult language and the occasional mom joke. Listener discretion is advised.
You can find us on Facebook or Instagram at Naptime Investigations or Twitter at NTI Pod. We're your hosts. I'm Taylor.
And I'm Amanda. We're just a couple of internet mom friends who like to talk about true crime and conspiracies when we can get our children to sleep.
Thanks for being our kind of person and joining us to talk about what normal people think isn't appropriate for small talk.
You guys, I'm glad you stick by us with this because life is wild.
Yeah, insane. Taylor and I were just talking about it, and we have a lot going on, and our podcast hasn't been a priority, which makes us sad. But there's just a lot going on, and we're still here. We're still banging this shit out, but, you know, bear with us.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're still here. We're trying to get our bearings back with everything going on and figuring out what to do next. So have suggestions, yeah. Send it our way.
So I think that we have a really good plan for the rest of the year, the rest of 2020. We just have a lot going on, you
definitely
know? Fun fact, Amanda's knocked up, so I'm super sick and just not feeling great, so that's been a huge thing. That's been really challenging in addition to a lot of other things going on in both of our lives. So
I think that we have another element that I don't know if a lot of other podcasts have, with us being on literal opposite ends mm-hmm. of the country, makes it so difficult for us. I mean, we make it work. It's nobody's fault or anything like that, but it's another element in our lives that we can't just be like, hey, let's get together.
Let's both of our families are in a good right? place for us to step away and have quiet time. So we're making it work. We just wanted to kind of let you guys know what was going on. We appreciate
your
patience.
We love you.
And maybe.
And I see your responses in the case suggestion form. So thank you very much for that. We will start working on that. And if you have any other cases, let us know, because that's one of the biggest, I think we've talked about this before, that's one of the biggest challenges is finding cases that are interesting and that you guys want to hear. I mean, obviously it's not that hard because we can find them, but it's just, I don't want to do something
that
I don't want to
hear.
Yeah,
that's the thing is, I you and I prefer different kind of cases, and it's almost like I'm
100%.
Curious if we're hitting the mark with our listeners, or if part of them are like you, and part of them are like me. But we just wanted to give you a heads up. This is the first time we're actually recording an episode in a while. We did a pretty big bulk record, so we haven't been able to update you on life things. So, yeah.
For hanging in.
I'm really excited about the next few cases that we have, honestly, till the end of the year. We have some really good cases. Not that there's any bad cases, but
I mean, they're all technically, they're not exactly good cases, you know what I mean? But
hiding cases. So
we get it.
Like my next two, I have found one podcast covering one of the cases, but other than that, I haven't been able to listen too much on them. So I'm excited for them, for my cases. And this case that we're about to cover is really interesting.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this one. Also, update. I know that we're a million minutes in, but I saw something on Twitter, and I'll share it over on our Twitter also. But I saw something on Twitter that Kristen Smart's case is actually—
I saw it too, oh my God.
Hours.
I'm shaking. I get my news off Google News because I feel like they pull from all news sources and I don't want a biased news. Anyway, Kristen Smart was on my For You page and it was talking about the beeping in the backyard, and I was like, oh my God.
After all of that, we're going to talk about this week. We're going to talk about the Sauter children and the Sauter family as a whole. So this case is absolutely insane. I was trying to explain it to Kevin earlier, And I was like, I can't just give you a 2-second synopsis of this because there is, it's so dense. Like,
it's a good, it's a very interesting case. There's a lot of moving parts, and you have to like actually digest and listen to it and not just like put it on the background. You like kind of like one of those cases, you know what I'm saying? There's just a lot of moving parts where you're like, what? Yeah. It's very interesting. So, yeah.
So
make buckle sure up, kids. Me. Yeah.
Follow me close. Buckle up. Okay. So George Sauter was an Italian immigrant who came to the U.S. at only 13 years old with his older brother. His older brother left him almost immediately after they got here. He was just like, all right, peace. I'm going back to my home. And he was like, all right, sick. So George decided to stay, obviously, and eventually he found work running supplies to workers at the railroads in Pennsylvania. George then went to build his own trucking company hauling coal. So like he was putting in the work, and I feel like that's super common with a lot of immigrants that come, especially in this time period. Like, you just see how hard they bust their asses like to make it work. So huge shout out to them. That's awesome. George later then met Jenny Capriani, and I could be butchering her last name, so I apologize. She was actually the daughter of a local storekeeper who was also an Italian immigrant. Eventually, the two became married and settled in Fayetteville, South Carolina, in a beautiful two-story home just outside of town. In 1923, they began having their first of, and I put this in capital letters, 10 children. 10. Absolutely the fuck not.
No, thank you.
I value my.
But this was when?
The little I have left.
This was when? Like, what year was this? Like, that was pretty common.
Yeah, I feel like, especially in an Italian family, like, super common.
Immigrant family. Like, I have a huge family because my Irish Catholic great grandmother had like 20 children.
500.
Yeah, and now I'm like one of her great great grandchildren, which there's like 15 or plus something, you know. So, and like I have her great great great, I mean, long story,
there's a lot of kids,
big families. Yeah, lots of kids.
Huge
birth control.
That's why I could never. I have absolutely. 2 when I want to cry. 10, I'd be done.
R.I.P. to her veg.
Straight up. Anyway, so as they're, you know, growing their family, George's business was booming. He was doing very, very well. They were very well off for a middle class family. So they were happy. They were doing well, especially with 10 kids. I don't know how, I mean, to say they're doing well with 10 children, I think says a lot.
And as a family of immigrants, right? Like, I feel like that could be very challenging to get your footing and to settle in. So that's.
Yeah, it's huge. So the one thing about George is that he had super strong opinions and was definitely not afraid to voice them, which I feel like.
Same.
Yes. Also same. One of those opinions that George had was his strong dislike for the Italian dictator Benito Mussolini, who caused him to get, or I'm sorry, which caused him to get major backlash from the local Italian community, which was full of Italian immigrants.
I don't know much about Mussolini, but I'm pretty sure he was not a good person. So, like, clearly he was on the right side of history expressing his dislike for this man.
George was woke. Let's just put it out there. He was woke AF. In 1944, Mussolini was actually executed, and George still continued to criticize him, which did not get a good response from the locals. I love that. He's like, he got killed, probably deserved it.
Yep.
Finally.
Yeah.
In 1945, a life insurance salesman who knew of George and his dislike for the dictator actually told him that, quote, his house would go up in smoke and your children are going to be destroyed because of the remarks about Mussolini.
Let's just put that in our back pocket, everyone.
Just keep that back there. Just chuck that in.
Yeah.
Just chuck that in.
Yeah.
Another visitor that came to the house, an electric company worker, was inspecting the house and told George that the fuse box would, quote, cause a fire someday, which George was super confused about because it had literally just been rewired when they installed a new stove. So there was no reason that this should have caused any issues or caused any type of concerns, especially for somebody to comment like it on that. So, and then in the next few weeks, the older children noticed a strange car parked along the main road in town and was watching the younger children as they came home from school. On Christmas Eve, 1945, Marion, the oldest daughter of the Sodder children, surprised three of her younger sisters with new toys she had bought them from her job. They were excited and their mother allowed them to stay up past bedtime as a little treat to like hang out and play with their new toys. So at 10, their mother said, yeah, you guys can stay up a little bit later as long as two older boys, Maurice and Lewis, are awake, and ask them, hey, did you guys remember to put the cows in and feed the chickens before going to bed? George and the two older boys, John and George Jr., were already asleep, and Jenny took the baby, Sylvia, upstairs and went to bed. At 12:30 a.m., the telephone rang and woke Jenny up, who went downstairs to answer it. The woman on the other line asked for a name of someone who she was not familiar with, and then she heard laughing in the background, and Jenny was like, okay, bye, and hung up. When she was downstairs, she noticed some of the lights were still on and the curtains were not drawn, which were normally things that the kids took care of if they stayed up past their parents and hadn't been done. She noticed that Marion was asleep on the living room couch and assumed that the other children had gone up to the attic and gone to bed where they slept. So she closed the curtains, turned the lights off, and went back to bed. Just, I mean, as a mom, I'm thinking, all right, these fucking kids forgot to do the shit that they were supposed to do. So I'm going to close the shit off and go to bed. Like, that's literally, I can picture myself being like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I love that. Because I am not the mom to let my children do things. So.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. We have a bedtime.
No, you need to go to sleep. Go to sleep.
We have a schedule. And we are not. We can play with the toys in the morning.
We can play with, there's always tomorrow.
Promise you. Promise. Yeah. Horrible mom.
Terrible. 0 out of 10. So around 1 a.m., Jenny was woken up again by the sound of an object hitting the roof on the home and then like a rolling noise. She was like, wow, that was weird. And then went back to sleep. She didn't think anything of it, but only to be woken up a little bit later by the smell of smoke. When she woke up again, she found the home office was on fire around the telephone line and fuse box. So she then wakes George and her older sons up. George, Jenny, Marion, Sylvia, John, and George Jr. were all out of the home. So they're all out of the home. They said that they yelled to the rest of the children upstairs, but heard no response. In his first police interview, John said that he went up to the attic to alert his sleeping siblings, but later changed his story, saying that he only called up there and never actually saw them, which honestly, like, is sad. But I don't know that I would run into a burning fire for my siblings either.
I was just going to say, for my sibling, my brother.
I'm probably not going to run into a burning house for you.
I would run into a burning house for my children.
100%.
Anyone else, unlikely.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
I don't know.
I say that, but I've never been in that situation.
Yeah,
but I understand. So hard. I can understand not doing it, I guess, is more what I'm saying. Yeah, if you, I don't, it's not, there's everybody. No, yeah. there's no here.
It and it's not his fault. Like, he didn't.
Oh my god, no.
It is what it is. But
yeah. So there was a water barrel close by that could have been used to put the fire out, but it was frozen solid. It was sad. There was major difficulty attempting to contact the police as the phones were obviously down. So phone lines were obviously down. The house is burned down, so there's not going to be any phone lines. So Marion decides to run over to a neighbor's house and attempted to call, but wasn't able to get through. A local passerby also attempted to stop somewhere and call, but couldn't reach anyone either. Eventually, someone, unsure who, was able to reach the fire department to get them out. So, like, they were trying to call the fire department, and I don't know what it was like at this time you know, now we call 911 and somebody answers, but I don't know if that was the case back then.
Terrifying.
Yeah. Absolutely terrifying. But I mean, after a couple attempts, they were finally able to get through, but I don't know how long that took, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So George attempted to climb the side of the house to get into the attic window and cut his arm in the process. The ladder they intended to use wasn't in its usual resting spot, and they couldn't find it anywhere. George then tried to pull both of his work trucks around to the house to use them to get into the house, but neither of the trucks would start, even though they were just working fine the day before, which is insane to me. So either somebody, like, in my opinion, like, just hearing this, like, either somebody set this up, or it's just an extremely bad string of bad luck.
In my opinion, all of those things, those aren't coincidences.
I don't think all, like, of them. No, I don't think so.
The ladder isn't there. The frozen water, like, you can't, that,
you can't control that, you know, much.
Yeah, but the trucks weren't working that were previously working. They
two
were
of them.
Attempting
not to, just one, but two, yeah, of them.
And they were just working. They were trying to get a hold of the fire department, emergency, whatever, mm-hmm, and they couldn't get through. Like, I don't know if that is an era thing, like, if that was, like, a common thing, right, then. However, I don't know. I just feel like it's...
Well, and there's a little note that I have here about the fire department that we'll get into in a second, that can maybe explain it. So... with having exhausted all of their options, they had no other choice but to stand there and watch the home burn and collapse over the next 45 minutes, assuming that the other children had died in the home. The fire department, who was grossly understaffed due to the war, didn't end up responding until later that morning. And later, the chief stated that the slow response was further hindered due to him not knowing how to drive the truck, and he had to wait for someone who could drive to come in. I feel like you shouldn't have the job as the fire department chief if you don't know how to drive a truck.
That's what I was just going to say. The chief?
I feel so bad for a lot.
The person in charge. Also, like, why can you not drive this truck? All cars then were standard. So, like,
what?
What couldn't you drive? Like, the stick shift. Like, what couldn't you drive?
Stick shift, I don't know how to drive a stick shift.
Taylor, back then all cars were stick shift.
Well, maybe he just didn't learn ever. But also, why do you have this job?
Yeah, I could drive a stick shift, but that's besides the point.
Why are you the only person here that doesn't know how to drive a truck?
And why are you in charge if you cannot drive this vehicle?
You should probably not have that job.
I'm confused as to what you can't drive about it. Like, is it... what is different? I feel like all vehicles back then were pretty much the same. There's no push to start. There was no automatic. There was nothing.
I don't know. It makes no sense to me. Yeah.
Fired. I hope he got fired.
I hope he did too, but chances are he probably didn't. So by 10 a.m., the family and the fire department began looking through the ashes for any remains. The chief ended up stating that they didn't find any bones or in the ashes whatsoever. Later, modern fire professionals stated...
I want to interrupt. I just Googled when they started making automatic cars, and I lied. Automatic transmissions came out in the 20s. But I do feel like this would probably not be an automatic truck.
I would assume not, given the size of it.
But I just want to say, like, I did say that incorrectly, and...
I was wrong.
Yeah.
Even still, you probably should know how to drive the truck that corresponds with your job. Being the chief. So.
Yes.
Yeah. So later, modern fire professionals stated that the search wasn't much of anything other than looking, but not necessarily a professional job. So, like, they basically said that they didn't really look. They just kind of, like, took a stick and, like, looked around. They didn't actually do an investigation, which I feel like is just a common thing, unfortunately. So the chief later said that the fire was hot enough to burn the bodies completely, and the children had died in the fire despite there being no trace of them. The police chief told the family to leave the site undisturbed so the fire marshal's office could do their investigation. However, 4 days later, George and Jenny decided they couldn't stand looking at it anymore and bulldozed 5 feet of dirt over the burn site and made a memorial garden for their lost children. Ultimately, they ruled the fire as an accident due to faulty wiring. An interesting note is that one of the jurors who ruled on this was that individual who told George his children would be destroyed. They held a funeral for the children on January 2nd, and George and Jenny were, quote, too grief-stricken to attend. The surviving children did attend, however. And I have a really hard time understanding that. Obviously, I can't imagine losing a child, let alone multiple children at one time. But I don't think that I would be okay not attending a funeral for my children. I don't know. I've not been there, so I shouldn't judge or anything like that, but I find that really hard to comprehend.
I also feel like a funeral is to pay like final respects.
Right.
And in my opinion, if that were my children, that would be purposeful, like for myself and my immediate family.
Right. Have some sort of closure.
Whoever else there loved them, but like mostly for the immediate family.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. But not long later, they began to question the findings and the investigation as a whole. They mentioned that during the early stages of the fire, the family's Christmas lights remained turned on, which is odd because if it was due to faulty wiring, realistically, the power should have gone out. Also, they later found the missing ladder at the bottom of an embankment about 75 feet away. A repairman also later said that the phone line wasn't damaged in the fire, but rather cut by someone. A man who was witnessed in the area around the time was eventually arrested and admitted to theft of some things on the property and did admit to cutting the phone line, thinking it was a power line, but he says that he didn't have anything to do with the fire. The Sodders had a really difficult time accepting the stance that the children's bodies had been burned completely, as many of the household items were still there. Jenny compared a similar fire that killed a family of 7 in the area and all bodies were found. So she's like, definitely this doesn't make sense. So she starts experimenting and burning animal bones to see if they would be completely burned, and none ever were. An employee at a local crematorium later told her that human bones would not be completely burned even after burning at 2,000 degrees for 2 hours, which is way hotter and longer than that house fire ever could have been. Eventually, the family came to a belief that the children were actually alive somewhere. Evidence actually emerged potentially supporting this theory, and the theory that someone set the fire on purpose. A bus driver passed through the city the night of the fire and said he saw someone throwing, quote, balls of fire at the home. A few months after the fire, as the snow began melting, Sylvia found a small, hard green rubber ball-like thing around the home. George said it looked like a hand grenade, recalling the loud thump Jenny said that she heard that night. With this, they do believe that the fire started on the roof, even if there was no way to prove it. Other witnesses came forward claiming to have actually seen the children peering out of a car passing by while she was watching the fire. Another woman said that she was at a rest stop between Fayetteville and Charleston, said that she saw a car with a Florida license plate in the parking lot of the rest stop. Eventually, the family decided to hire a private investigator. This PI learned about the guy that had threatened George being on the jury and reported this to George. He also learned of rumors around the town that even though they didn't find the remains, that the police, that the chief found a heart and packed it in a box and buried it, which he supposedly confessed to a local minister who confirmed this to George. George then decided to confront the chief, who then took him to where he buried this box, and they took the box to a funeral director who determined that it was beef liver and had never been exposed to a fire. The chief later confessed that he did this in hopes that the Sodders would find it and come to terms with the fact that the children died in the fire. What the fuck? What the fuck? If you have nothing, just say you have nothing. Like, I don't understand. You went so far out of your way to be a dumbass. Like, even more, like, you can't drive it. Like, this guy should not be in charge.
This whole case is like, what even?
Why? I especially considering that there was that other fire, like, that all of the bodies were found and no bodies were found here. Like, there's a fucking problem, you know? So George began believing he had seen his children in various places. One being that he saw a magazine picture in 1949 of a girl who resembled one of his missing daughters, Betty. He decided to make the drive to New York to the girl's school and demanded to see her, but ultimately he was denied being able to see her. He also sent requests off to the FBI to obtain their assistance in the search for his children, but ultimately they rejected, saying that this was a local matter and the local authorities would need to request their involvement, and the local department declined to do this. And I don't know if the FBI still does this, but they need to not do this. They just need to get involved.
Yes, but let me play the devil's advocate. If that were the case, then they'd be involved in so many.
They'd be so backed up too. Like, I get it.
It's hard, especially because we have that like federal and state government
right
separation that it's hard.
Yeah. Later the same year, he obtained the help of a local pathologist to supervise a new search of the grounds. He was able to unearth small bone fragments later found to be human vertebrae. The remains were sent off to be examined and confirmed to be all from the same person, thought to be around 16 or 17 with a max age of around 22 since the centra was still unfused, which normally fuse around 23. With this, it's unlikely that the remains were that of any of the children since the oldest that was missing was only 14.
You answered my question.
Gotcha.
You're so good.
I got it. Eventually, the state closed its investigation completely as they felt that it was hopeless and there was no additional information, even though they didn't actually do an investigation. It's fine. The Sodders still did not give up on their missing children, regardless of the fact that law enforcement had. They initially put up a $5,000 reward and soon after doubled it to $10,000 for information. They put up a billboard with the same information, and it would later actually become a landmark in the town.
I just want to say that is a shit ton of money for back then.
Absolutely.
So, like, even now, like, $10,000 is kind of a lot for a reward, but back then that is a lot of money. Yeah,
that's a lot of money. That's a huge amount of money. George continued following up on all leads on any of his children as far as he could. In 1967, he traveled to Houston to follow another tip from a woman who said that Lewis, one of the missing children, revealed his true identity to her and that he and Maurice are living in Texas somewhere. When they were there, George was unable to speak with her, though. He enlisted the help of local police who were able to speak with them, and they denied being the missing sons. The Sodders received a letter in the mail at one point that was postmarked Central City, Kentucky, with no return address, supposedly coming from their son Lewis, which included a photo of him and who would have been around 30 if he survived. The family forwarded this information to another PI, but they never reported back and were unable to locate him. This photo gave them hope, though, that at least one of their children was still alive, and they even hung this photo in their home. I know, that's so creepy, right? I understand the hope.
I was just going to say, I think that made, if that made them sleep at night or feel a little bit better.
You have to do what you have to do.
I can't knock it. However.
However, it's still weird.
With the information that I've heard about this case through you and elsewhere, I have more knowledge that I just don't think that, and also I'm on the outside looking in, like I can't
shame
this family for doing that, but I don't think I would hang a random picture in my house.
I don't think I would either, but I've also never been there, so I don't know. In 1969, George Sauter passed away. Jenny and her surviving children continued to seek answers even after his death. Jenny wore black for the rest of her life, mourning the death of her family and tended to the garden for her children.
That's so sad.
I know. Eventually, Jenny also passed away in 1989, and the family took the billboard of the children down, which is so sad. The remaining children continued to publicize the case of their missing siblings. Their theory is that the Sicilian mafia was trying to get money from George, and the children were taken by someone who knew and wanted to keep them safe and took them back to Italy. That feels very far-fetched, but I also don't know what George's involvement was with the Sicilian mafia. So, I mean, there could be so much more to it. Sylvia Sauter, who was the youngest of the Sauter children and the only surviving member that we are aware of, in 2015 said in an interview that she still believes that her siblings survived that night. Sylvia's daughter also said that she promised George and Jenny she would never let the story die and she would do everything that they could. To this day, the children are still missing without a trace.
What do you think happened?
I don't know. And this is, like, I feel like in a lot of cases, especially in missing persons cases, I have a pretty good theory or an inkling as to what happened. I have zero in this case. There's just so much wild things. I think it's definitely possible somebody took them, especially if they were supposed to go out of the house to tend to cows and chickens and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Which seemed to have been normal. And especially if somebody was watching them. Knew what their routine was. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that they died in the fire, but I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah, I for sure don't think that they died in the fire. I don't think that's what happened. I'm curious if they were setting up the fire and like the kids just happened to go out to tend to the things
and they had to do something. Yeah.
I do think that they were taken.
Yeah.
In that a lot of those things were set up. I don't know where I think they were taken to or why.
But I can't help but wonder if maybe there's a lot of information that was not provided to the public. And I know that happens with a lot of investigations, but I mean from like George in general, like what his involvements were, especially if the children believe that he was involved with the Sicilian mafia, like what if there's more to that and he just didn't give that information out? You know what I mean? Because I feel like if somebody took them and they were wanting something from George, he would have said, hey, they want this money or they want this and they have my children. You know what I mean? So like, I don't know.
I think just based on how George dedicated the rest of his life to finding his children, he would have done anything possible.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know if I really think that he would have either kept his cards close enough to not share or if he wouldn't have done any, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, yeah.
Give back my kids and like you can have me or you can you can have my company, you can have whatever money you want, you can have whatever. But that's tough. I do think that they were taken. I do think that they were just, I hope that they were given some sort of life. I don't know if that really happened.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know if they were maybe too young to even remember what happened. I don't know. It's just wild. This is a wild, wild case. So I don't know.
Yeah. But then again, like, if you think about back then, what, the 40s-ish? Mm-hmm. The 40s? People were just thrown into families and not talked about who their real parents were. You know what I'm saying? Like, so and so, oh yeah, this is my son or whatever. And people wouldn't question whether like their sister gave birth to their kid or like, I just feel like so much of that happened back then and wasn't talked about that if someone actually did take their, those kids and just threw them into some Sicilian families or what, whoever,
they wouldn't know the difference.
They wouldn't have questioned. They wouldn't have. I don't know. I don't know if I think that that's what happened. I'm just in my head. I'm like, well, I don't think that a lot of people would have batted an eye if that would have happened, I guess.
No, I think you're right on the nail. Absolutely.
I don't know. It's sad.
Yeah. It's a sad case, but, and I don't even know that anything will ever come from it, which I think is the worst part of it.
Doubt it.
Yeah.
It's so old now. Also, it's hard to prove things now. Even if
so, like, hard. Yeah, absolutely.
They're so grown at this point, possibly even dead. I mean, like you said, right. The only one alive. Like, how the only way that I think that could potentially be proved is the familial DNA tests that are all out there.
Right.
But even then, like, there's so many of those kids, the solder kids, you know, that like I don't know if they could really pinpoint which soldered child that spawn would have came from, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And I feel like they would have to, like, wouldn't they have to like exhume one of the parents
also? Likely.
Yeah, so I feel like there's so many unanswered questions that we will never have answers to, unfortunately.
Yeah,
but I hope I'm wrong.
So what I'm saying is, to prove that they are so-and-so's child, I would think that they would have to exhume it, just because there's so, I doubt that a lot of those did DNA tests. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Since a lot of them are dead other than Sylvia. So there's just so many moving parts that would have to happen. I just don't, I can picture it. But
who knows? I hope I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, but yeah, so that's the Sauter family.
Thanks, friends.
Thanks for hanging out with us for a little bit. I need to go take a nap.
Same.
We hope you join us every Monday for our weekly episode, and as an added bonus, we've deemed the first Sunday of every month as Serial Killer Sunday, so you can look forward to an extra long episode about our favorite serial killers once a month.
Go follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Naptime Investigations or Twitter at NTIPod. If you want us to cover one of your favorite cases, please send your case suggestions to naptimeinvestigations@gmail.com or via the case suggestion link in our Instagram bio.
As always, we hope you enjoy this episode and thanks for joining this party.